For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey, have you heard? Podcast One has a whole bunch of awesome new shows filled with big names that are waiting for you on our brand new amazing app. This one's a game changer. There's Norman Lear talking to Amy Poehler, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Charles Barkley. Geffen Playhouse Unscripted with Bryan Cranston, Josh Gad, and soon Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
OC Real Housewife Heather Dubrow's World. Lady Gang's Three Mimosa Podcast with Leah Michelle, Nelly Furtado, Elle King, and more. Plus every episode of The Adam Carolla Show, Dan Patrick, and Rich Eisen. And if you like what happens in the ring, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Chael Sonnen, and a whole bunch more. So download our one-of-a-kind new app and see for yourself. Go to the App Store, Google Play, or download it now at podcastone.com.
And by the way, Adam Carolla is a major entertainment personality. Does stand up in, and you're in Vegas as well, right?
Oh, I was in Washington D.C. this morning talking to Congress. I swear I was. I know it sounds insane. Well, it is insane.
And he's also on
not about cars, sadly, about free speech. But all I could think is I want to get in front of some car guys.
Well, you got it tonight, for sure. So, if, I mean, we'll have you to take a chair there.
Sure, yeah.
Good. And so, as I say, Adam's on the radio regularly out here and very politically active and great entertainer. I'm not going to talk about that too much tonight. Like, not at all. But
politically active.
But the father of the GT, the current GT, is Raj Nair right here. Stand up, Raj, and come join us. So, you know, Raj is really a race car savant. If you've enjoyed the Mustang, if you enjoyed any of the high performance cars from Ford Motor Company, Raj has his fingerprints all over everything. And we were talking early. What started as an idea to bring Mustangs to Le Mans turned into this underground project for the new Ford GT, and it was built literally in a basement. Several of us have been in the kind of the underground portions, and I watched the film with Craig Metros up above, who's one of the designers, and so you pulled off just a miracle underground and put together an amazing car, and I just want to say thanks so much. And Raj is president of Ford Motor Company North America. So thank you so much for joining us. You didn't have to go very far.
No, it was good. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Good to see you again, Raj.
So when this came to mind, the first person I really thought of was a really close friend of mine, Chip Ganassi. And Chip is a guy that has really defines motorsport enthusiast as a successful race car driver, Indianapolis driver. He has a racing team, Chip Ganassi Racing, and I've got the list here. But his teams have won Le Mans, the Brick, you know, Indy multiple times, the Brickyard 500, Daytona 24-hour. I mean, it goes on. I can't think of a race that you have not won. And for a guy that's as jovial and fun, you must have a game face that gets the job done, because he's always smiling and he's always there and he absolutely can't say no, and he's just one of the most beloved guys in motorsports. So when I texted Chip, it must be probably a month or two or three ago, and said we're doing this screening, can you come out and join us? He says, I'll be there. Well, he thought it was in LA. So as we got closer, we kind of checked in and figured out it was here. But anyways, I just want to say thanks so much again. Another great friend that flew in just to be here with us tonight, and a legend and a great friend, Chip Ganassi. Please join us. And we all know many of the drivers that race for Chip. Dario Franchitti, we're doing an event with Dario, another great personality and a winner. But tonight we have Ryan Briscoe. And Ryan, Australian, started out in karts and continued to drive successfully and also drives the Ford GTs. And we're just so happy to have you here tonight, Ryan. Thanks so much. And next, and the last one up is a fellow. I'm trying to get the adoption papers done because I want this guy to be my son. Henry Ford came out, and he did some interning out in Los Angeles, and he has got the most wonderful smile and warmth. And if there was ever somebody that carry on the Ford, the family tradition of excellence, performance, and the future of Ford, it's Henry Ford. And it's such a great name, Henry Ford. It's got such a good ring to it. But so he didn't have to go very far. But I just want to say thanks for being in the film, and thanks for being a special part of our museum group, and another guy that just can't say no. And thanks so very much. Please join us. And by the way, sitting in the far front row is royalty. I just want you to know that. It's Keith Crane. Wave, Keith. This guy, I mean, I'm sure everybody here knows Auto Week, Crane Communications, Automotive News. I call him the king of Detroit and the king of the automotive industry. But there's he's a major, major enthusiast, and I'm just so happy to see you here tonight. Thanks so much, Keith. At any rate, sure, please come on through. So, Adam, I'm going to let you kind of carry this, but I just want to say thanks again, and thanks to everybody. And our group knows what we're doing. We've got 3 days of fun just packed in ahead. So again, thanks everybody for joining us. And Patricia, are you still here? Thank you so much. And Spence and Christian. This museum, by the way, I hope you've had a chance to walk through it a bit. To my way of thinking, it's perhaps the finest museum in the world. And the great part about it is that Henry Ford had the foresight back when a lot of this equipment was new to collect this innovation. So it's the Henry Ford Museum of American Innovation. And I think what a perfect title. And Patricia guides us through. She's our executive director and great fun. So I just want to say thanks for having us by here. And again, thanks everybody for being here. And Nate, come on up. Oh, Nate.
Oh, yeah, Nate. Yeah, Bruce Meyer, everybody. He's a very passionate pain in the ass who would not rest until we all showed up with our film today. is Mos Nolan Nolan out here? Mos you'll recognize from the documentary as well. So what we're first off, if you guys like motoring documentaries, Nate Adams and I, who made this film and made the Paul Newman film as well, are just finishing up the Willie T. Ribbs documentary. I see a lot of colored faces out there tonight, so first African-American man to, you guys know Willie T. Ribbs, right? Yeah, all right. Well, I don't have to tell you about Willie T., but that'll be our third racing doc, so something for the gearhead, something for us to watch on occasion as well. So that should be done when, Nate?
End of the year.
All right.
We'll have a cut for Sundance in September, but
yeah, I watched a four-hour version of it the other week, so we'll probably trim it down just a little bit from 4 hours. All right. So what we're going to do is I do a podcast called CarCast, and my partner over here is Matt DeAndrea, so Matt should probably come up, and we'll do a little round table, and we'll make it into a podcast, and I think you guys can ask questions, and we can kind of take it that way, right? Want to do it that way?
Sure.
All right. So, I don't know. Do we have a microphone for... No, we're out of mics.
We're out of mics. And Nate, when they ask questions, they don't have mics.
All right. But we'll repeat them. Nate, lend Lend Matt your microphone.
I found one right here.
Oh, okay. Well, that's perfect. All right, so we're rolling on this, and we just thought it'd be fun as long as we had all these luminaries in one spot that we could do a little Ford-centric, GT-centric car cast, and I guess we'll get started. So, Matt, I'm going to put the pressure on you because I'm insanely sleep-deprived.
Okay.
I was literally... flew into D.C. last night and then woke up at 6 in the morning and testified in front of Congress about, I still don't know what we're talking about. It had something to do with free speech. I faked my way through it. It was about 4 hours long. We went out to lunch, and then I hustled over here, collapsed in my room for about 45 minutes, and put the same suit I was wearing in front of Congress back on and showed up here. So I'm a little disoriented. But why don't we Matt... Form a thought.
Yeah, we can. I mean, thank you all for coming down here and doing this with us. This has been great. The movie is fantastic. Thank you all for coming out here to see it. And I guess we could start off with some questions from you guys, right? Do you want to start with some crowd questions?
Well, Nate whispered in my ear and thought it'd be a good idea to go through the panel and ask everyone what their impressions were.
Excellent.
Of the film. And then we'll get to the audience questions. So we'll start with Raj. Raj?
Oh, I thought it was great. It was fantastic to watch and to relive that. And it's such a proud moment for Ford, right? It's such a big part of our history. So to watch it and think about that was the entire reason why we did the new GT. I mean, that win in 66 and the history of the GT40 was why we came back in 2016 to try to celebrate the 50th anniversary the right way. And hopefully everybody gets a feeling now of why that win was so important for us as a company.
Chip, thoughts?
Thanks, Adam. Good evening, everyone. You know, for me, in 1966, I was all of 8 years old, and I think But I was my first knowledge of the GT really was an HO car that I was racing my little slot car around, and. But obviously, being a fan of an early fan, I was go karting and involved in motorsports at an early age, and so all these I thought what was great about the film for me was it just connected a lot of dots, you know, connected a lot of sort of knowledge that I had that really I didn't really connect it all together, and so certainly the film did that. I thought I don't know that it fell upon. Deaf ears or eyeballs tonight, but you know there were a lot of drivers in that film. I like to have my hands on things, and there were a lot of drivers in that film in those days that were, you know, apparently some of those guys were switching back and forth, you know, between Ferrari and Ford, which I thought was interesting. That I sort of, you know, I sort of knew in the back of my mind, but really didn't, you know, really didn't piece that all together. So for me, it connected a lot of dots, and I thought it was a great film. Thank you very much for what you do for the sport.
Yeah, thank you. It's our pleasure. We just come up with stories. We're enthusiasts, and you know, I'm sort of proud to say that there are a lot of guys that are filmmakers who aren't interested in cars, and then there's a lot of guys who are interested in cars, but they're not filmmakers. And we're lucky enough to find Nate and put him together with me, and now we have the guy who's interested in the cars and the guy who knows how to make films, and now we can make. A good car film. So hopefully we'll continue that. And Nate's even learning about cars. What do you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunate. Slowly. Slowly but surely.
Ryan, your impressions.
Yeah, thanks. Matt, I thought it was amazing. Just all the footage that you have, the interviews with the drivers, the footage of the cars racing back then. It was just beautifully done. The story is incredible. The rain in Sebring in 67. I mean, that was just unbelievable. We wouldn't dream of driving our cars in that sort of weather these days. So it was just really cool to see, you know, what the drivers went through back then. It was a different approach. Only two drivers in a race for 24 hours. We do it with three. But a lot of what they did then as well was looking after the equipment, which we have to do, but we do it running flat out. So it's a little bit different. I heard Chip chuckle at one point of the... Museum of Horrors that Enzo used to have. I could see that being set up at our race shop sometime soon.
We but, have it at Ford still.
Oh, you
do. Those. Nobody ever talks about the square footage of those museums, by the way, because you never really know.
But no, great job by everyone, and I was really impressed.
Henry.
Well, I have to say that I did not really enjoy seeing my face on this giant screen. But other than that, I thought it was an amazing film. And congratulations to Adam, you and Nate. I know how hard you guys worked on this project, and I think it really came out well. And I think you guys did an exceptional job of capturing the gravity of racing back in the 60s and 50s, and the obviously the consequences and the struggles and the just the emotion behind what all of those folks went through. And obviously some of it's still present in today's motorsports, which is what makes motorsports, I think, so interesting. Obviously we have much better safety precautions now than they used to, but you know, racing is exciting. It's and it's terrifying all at once, and it's just and for me, obviously, it's about family. I mean, being at Le Mans this year with my dad, 50 years later or 51 years later, and we were back there last year, 50 years later. It's really fun, and it's an honor to be a part of that story and that history and that legacy. And so I am just really proud to be a part of this great team at Ford and Chip Ganassi Racing, and just a remarkable film. So congratulations and thank you.
Thank you. Does Mose have a microphone? Yes. Oh, there he is.
Here we are. This is my fourth viewing, and I have to say it is still – and all of the books that I've read and all of the racing movies that I've seen is over the top. Nate and Adam has done a terrific job. And I think what's so special about this particular doc, I don't know how these fellows broke into the compound, the Ferrari compound, to get the interviews, but it's the first time visually, audio, that we've seen so much of the Ferrari people. And that was very interesting. And they were very humble, I thought. And they certainly contributed their part to the sport.
Yeah, I think Nate told them that Ford wasn't going to be in the film initially. And then they did it. And then he went back and did the second half.
Told them this was just going to be a Ferrari film.
Yeah. This is about your dominance over Lancia.
Yeah. Although before we start with some of the
questions. Well, wait, I want to ask, because really, all hail Nate Adams for that, because...
it took about a year, right?
It took me more than a year to get that interview with Piero.
Well, it was a challenge. I mean, initially, which is, we're going to make this documentary about you being dominated at Le Mans. And you don't do interviews when you dominate.
Yeah.
What about interviews when you're dominated? And how did you set that up?
I just kept telling them that they did not want their story not to be told. That it was important for the world to know, because they really were the most dominant racing team up until then. They crushed for a decade. And they, other than when Carroll Shelby won, they had won every single year.
Didn't your wife know somebody who spoke Italian?
Yeah, and the only way I got Mauro Fiorgheri, who was the engine builder, because he told me he didn't speak English and that he wasn't going to do the interview. And my wife's best friend is a clothing designer in Italy, and she called him, and I think she flirted with him. And then he said he would do it if she came to the interview, and I walked in there, and the guy spoke perfect English. And I was like, great, we're going to do this interview in English. And he goes, no, we're not. And so he did it all in Italian.
It's funny.
He's dating the designer now. He's dating your wife's friend.
After Nate told me the guy spoke perfect English but chose to do it in Italian, I sort of liked the flavor of it and the subtitles, and I thought it added some authenticity to it.
Since you guys are all car guys, there's still one when I saw they called the valve. I think it's a valve, but they called it a trumpet. When they did the translation, and it still says trumpet.
Oh,
I
really?
Was like, yeah. Oh, I forgot to change that.
No, I think that's right. I think it's the trumpet intakes, right?
That's the intake. Yeah. Right. I totally didn't know anything about cars.
Or in English or Italian,
right?
Apparently,
yeah. Bruce Meyer has a question.
Well, it's a comment. After watching that film and realizing the magnitude of that 50-year anniversary win last year, not this current year, but the year before, I can't imagine the pressure that must have been on Raj and Chip to win it. I mean, Ford went to every means possible to give you every tool imaginable to come back 50 years later and win Le Mans. I'd be interested in hearing kind of what you went through and the pressure you went through and picking the drivers and so forth.
Let me just say that into the microphone. So Chip and Raj, the pressure of coming back after 50 years, after a 50-year layoff to run the GT once more, and the pressure that and all the decision-making about what drivers you pick and so on and so forth. What was that pressure like?
Second isn't an option.
Yeah, it was intense. to do a race program, you really need to be thinking ahead. So, you know, whatever it was 3 years before, there were a few of us that were, you know, really into motorsports and Ford were thinking about the 50th anniversary and we're thinking we have to do something. And sometimes we do, you know, anniversary editions and you know, sticker jobs. And we thought, no, we need to do something real. And so going back and racing was, at Le Mans again, was our thought. Overall win and what's going on in the prototype category, and if you're familiar with what's going on, it's a little bit out of control in the prototype category right now. It's not really relevant to what we do in the showroom. And you know, the rumor is, you know, Porsche is going to drop out this year and you'll be left with one manufacturer and overall. So it didn't carry. It was the 50th anniversary of the Mustang coming up. We were actually working on the 50th anniversary, the 2015 Mustang, and about to launch that. And we thought, well, maybe we should take the Mustang. It was going to be global for the first time, the new Mustang, and taking it global, maybe we should go race it at Le Mans. And so we started some work on that, and the Mustang's a great car, but it's a big car. And so aerodynamically, it would have had a really tough time against the competition. And we could have done a lot of waivers and stuff, so we started working on that car and basically came up with a homologation special Mustang. We'd have only built – we needed to build 300 of them, so we would have built 300. And the key thing is we would have gone in 2015. And so we would have had a year under our belt and then come to 2016 because no one wins their first year at Le Mans. It just doesn't happen. I mean, it's such a hard race. For good or for bad, probably actually for good, the company – we took it forward and – basically at the CEO chairman level, we were told that, you know, we didn't want to do that. It didn't really look that much like a Mustang anymore, a carbon fiber Mustang. And most of all, Mustang didn't need it. Mustang didn't need a win at Le Mans to carry any panache. I mean, Mustang has its own name and its own history and its own heritage, and it stands for something that has obviously been very successful globally. So we went back and sulked for a little while, and then we got mad, and then we kicked off the basement project. And I don't want to, you know, make it sound like it was illegal or anything, because I was heading product development at the time, so everybody working on it, you know, worked for me, so they were doing what I told them to do. But at the same time, we had been told by world headquarters that we were not going back to Le Mans. And one of the things we learned during the Mustang program was what we could actually do. If we kept it low volume, we could do a production program for really efficient investment. The tooling now is really, really good if you're going to hold the building 200, 250 vehicles a year. And then we thought, well, for that, we could actually do another GT. And that's how it started. But it was a crash program. We had lost a lot of time. We wanted to make sure we progressed it enough that we knew we would both have a great car and a great race car and then take it as a really, you know, complete package back up. And particularly when they looked at the car, we wanted them to fall in love with it and we wanted them to want one. And so they would give us permission to go back and race. And that's what we did. We showed it to Alan Mulally and showed it to Bill Ford, and they did fall in love with it and told us to go race it. And we showed it 2015 January at Detroit. And it was a surprise because we had kept it such a secret. I remember we took Chip down there to we didn't really tell him what was going on. We just took him down to the basement and said we were thinking about something, and literally opened the door, and then he walked by and he saw the clay and said, and I'm in.
Normally when they take you to the basement and they don't tell you what's going on, it's a bad thing.
It's a bad thing.
But in this particular case, yeah, it's a good thing, right,
Yeah,
Chip?
You take an Italian guy down the basement, he gets worried.
I'm curious, though, Chip, how much time did you have before they said the end goal is Le Mans? You have, what, a year and a half to build, turn it into a race car, test it, prove it, and, by the way, not embarrass us in the process, make it look awesome, make it fast, and then go to Le Mans, and you better win.
Right. thanks. no, I mean, we got together with Ford in 2014, and where we're doing the DP program. So, and we knew we had this EcoBoost engine that was new at the time, EcoBoost for Ford, and we knew this engine had a future life in quote unquote sports cars. They said, hey, you know, get involved. Let's do this DP thing. We don't know how much we want to put in the DP, but we know we want to go sports car racing. And again, I was like Raj said, we were thinking about Mustang at that time, and one day Edsel invited me up, and we went, like we said, down into the basement of a building, I don't know where, the product development building, you know, and you go down a hall and sort of lights
across
are going,
the street, right over
lights
here.
Are going on in front of you, and they're going off behind you automatically, you know, and you go down another set of steps and down another hall, and the lights go off again behind you, and they go on again in front of you, and it's just like in the movies, you know, you sort of, you're down in the basement and you're in a dark sort of nondescript room and they curtain, and you know, you pull back the curtain, and I just remember my first vision of that car. It looked to me like someone, it was the obvious grandson of the GT40, and it was a current day version. I mean, like someone stuck a straw in it and just, you know, suck the air out of it, just suck the body down onto the chassis a little bit more. And I was just speechless. And after that, Edsel took us up to the 13th floor there in the what do you call the glass?
Glass house.
Glass. Yeah, world headquarters. And went up to the 13th floor, whatever, or 12th floor or something, in the dining room, and we talked about it all afternoon. And I was just excited. But you know, when you talk about the pressure, it we couldn't tell anybody. So not only did we have this pressure on us, but we couldn't tell. I couldn't say anything about it. And this was maybe, you know, I don't know, what was that, June or something?
June, July.
June, July of 15. I said, well, when are we going to see a car? And they said, well.
Well, we're not ready yet.
We don't know yet. And I said, well, what race are you talking about? They said, 16. I said, well, that's a year from now. And they said, yes. They said, well, we'll have a car for you by September, which I didn't realize in Detroit, September means October. So, right. I don't know. I didn't have time to have any pressure on us. I mean, we were just working. We literally had people in our race shop working on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And, it was a thrash, believe me. And But I knew if the car would hold together, I knew we were there. You know, I mean, we just had a car that would stay in one piece, we were going to be fine. And I was, I kept telling Raj that at Le Mans there in 2016. I kept looking at him saying, "Hey, Raj, take it easy. We'll be okay. Don't worry." Right?
He did it just like that. He didn't know my elbow was broken at the
right
time.
Right.
Do we have another question from the audience?
Aside from where is this secret Le Mans Mustang we all want to see now? Cause
yeah, I mean, it only made it to the drawing phase. It was a cool project, but I'm actually glad it got killed because we wouldn't have the GT without it. And I mean, the pressure obviously was through the whole time frame, but you know, the actual race, you know, you're in the moment of the race. You always feel pressure to race, but you're just, you know, in the moment of the race and, you know, you're in front of the screens and figure out what's going on. I think the only time during the race is pressure is just because you'd look over and there's Bill Ford, and then you look over on the other side and there's Edsel Ford, and you're thinking, and I didn't worry too much about Henry, but... but Bill and Bill and Edsel on either side of you while you're trying to win a race is yeah. motivating.
We have one straight ahead.
Hey guys, awesome show. Quick question: can you give us a sense of what the emotion was in that last hour? You're trailing the Ferrari in 2016. I'm watching it on YouTube, and I'm like, they're 2 minutes, 3 minutes behind, and then I got busy at the Rodeo Drive Concord, and found out that you guys won, and I'm like, how did these guys win? And then, can you give us a sense of what happened afterwards with the rules and the Ferrari guys, and what was going on there?
The black flag, yeah.
Yeah, we passed the Ferrari.
Yeah, let me repeat that.
Go ahead and repeat that.
Oh, hey, John Hennessy. The end of the race. Ferrari's ahead. There's not much time left.
Yeah.
Take us through that.
Well, we actually, there's a lot of drama that happened in the middle of the night. And, one of the things that happened was we got called in to fix our number lights, which was really crazy because all the cars have transponders and the organizers know exactly where every car is and who's in every car and et cetera. But we got called in to fix number lights. That lost us on one car. But for our lead car, one of the issues we had was it was running good pace. We were in good shape. We knew we would be a little slower at night because the car doesn't like cold tires. But when it warms up, the car comes into its own. The track comes us, and we were in fast. And so we weren't too worried about catching Ferrari from falling behind at night. But then we had an electronics problem on the car, and we didn't shut the car down during a pit stop, which is required. And so we got a penalty, and that put us behind. Even then, the math, we knew the pace we could run, and we knew we'd get ahead. So I think the drama of, particularly the return movie where it was drama. We were worried for a little bit, but doing the math, we should have caught him. I think we caught him at 11 a.m. After that, to be honest, I was worried because people were getting too happy. When the Toyota broke down, then it became just like dead silent in our garage, and that reinforced, hey, anything can happen. And so then it was just quiet, intense until the car passed the checkered flag. So I don't know, that's the way I remember it. Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. I mean, I remember at 11 when we passed the Ferrari, I remember Joe Hendricks was there and Bill, and they said, Chip, they go, well, what? You know, they were kind of pilfering me with questions all morning, and I'm sort of half asleep from being up all night, and I'm a little slap happy. And they said, what happens between now and 3 o'clock? And I said, well, I said, a million things can happen between now and 3 o'clock. I said, only one of them's good. and they went, oh. And they sort of got quiet again, and that shut them up for another hour or so. Yeah.
All right, let me tell you about Car Shield. Driving season's in full swing. Don't let your road trip be ruined by unexpected repairs. Get extended vehicle service protection from Car Shield. Do what I did. It's only smart. New water pumps over $500. Air conditioning can be up to $1,500. A new engine, don't get me started. $5,000 or over. Not just mechanical repairs. Your car's computer, GPS, electronics too. Even a simple repair to a sensor can cost you over $1,000. Let's be smart. Let's go with Car Shield. Have your favorite mechanic or dealership do the work. Car Shield gets them paid directly. Don't worry about being reimbursed. Sign up today and get the VIP treatment, 24/7 roadside assistant, and a rental car while yours is in the shop. Let's go. Car Shield. Let's go. Maxipata.
Save yourself from high repair bills. Get covered by CarShield like we did before something goes wrong. Go to carshield.com/carcast and you'll save 10%. That's carshield.com/carcast. Carshield.com/carcast. A deductible may apply.
All right, now back to the show. We have a question over here to the right.
Yeah, right in front. Just a retro question about the movie, and I think Henry and Mose will be able to answer it. After all of your obvious success in 66 and 67, why did the factory decide to stand down and turn over to privateers after the 67 season?
So why did Ford get out after all the consecutive wins?
Well, there were several reasons. There's a fellow by the name of Nader that got onto the automotive companies about improving damageability and then the emissions and so on. And then there was a request from the feds to do less spending in Europe. So with this terrific chore that Mr. Ford had in front of him to start building cars that were safe and didn't dirty the air, you know, he figures, okay, we're on top. Let's take the money and the manpower and go after and take care of these two very important worldwide concerns. So that's the way I saw it. And yet the car left an image and a reputation to where privateers had a lot of confidence in it. So they picked it up and kept going. We ran victories in 69 even afterwards. So it was the job that was done earlier in perfecting the cars, especially after the 67 version that Carroll Shelby and his American All-American team put out. The privateer felt confidence if they could afford to participate, and that's how the company stayed out of it, and the Ford blew over was still on the track.
You wouldn't have wanted to see the 70s version anyway, with the fake wood grain paneling on the side and the scoops that didn't function in front of the rear brakes there. It's just, it wouldn't have been pretty. It wouldn't have been a good light. You see pictures of yourself from the 70s? That's what it would have been. Huge afro, big collar. Thank goodness. All right, let's do one straight ahead here. So part one, the development of the GT40 and what did that do for Ford development and then driving the NSX around town?
I wasn't at Ford in 1966, so I was two. So I imagine it was a similar influence that the current car and the current vehicle has been. Actually, the dyno that they showed is the same dyno that we ran the new GT engine on.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, we still use that dyno, and it's still the race dyno.
So not a lot of money spent updating that. So just
actually, quite a bit. It's the same room. There's probably nothing left that's the same. It's one of the most advanced dynos in the world, actually, which is why we use it. And it's still when you... in fact, I remember a night I was going home, and I could hear it, and I knew it was our engine. I called the guy and said, "Hey, are you running the Le Mans cycle on our engine right now?" And they said, "Yeah."
Yeah, Nate, I don't want to say Nate doesn't know much about cars, but when we were doing the dock, he thought that was so we could get the car smogged. I had to explain to him that they don't run cats. They don't run a cat system at Le Mans. And then what's up with the NSX?
Yeah, what's up with the NSX?
It's a nice car.
I got a 350 dually, man. I don't know about you.
No, I mean, right? We're always benchmarking cars, so we always want to know what everybody else is doing, and certainly for the GT program, you know, that vehicle came out and it was one of the benchmarks. I think it's a good car. I think there's some aspects, you know, to be honest, that it lacks what we would call emotional engagement. It doesn't engage the driver. You're driving on it. You're not driving within it.
Do you think the head of the NSX program is driving around in a Ford GT?
I'm pretty sure he's not. If he is, I'd want to know who gave him one.
We've answered our question.
Yeah, but we drove the McLarens. We drove the Ferrari 458s. And in... On the other side, I think, you know, for example, when we were benchmarking the car, the 458 Especial was our benchmark. I think that's a fantastic car, much better than the base. The Especial is a very special car. The McLaren 650 we liked, but it wasn't the benchmark. When the 675 LT came out, we thought that was a very special car. So
Are you
we
married?
We actually do like our competitors.
Do you get
cars.
To use this strategy with your wife?
No.
I'm just testing other women.
I do not.
Just so I can compare them
to you.
I can
barely get away if it's got a Ford Oval to buy it, much less something else.
Let me just add one thing, if I could, to that. Just a little quick NSX story. Some of you remember the so when we introduced the GT at Detroit.
Yeah.
Remember, so that would have been Detroit.
2015, we introduced the GT and the NSX was
Detroit
introduced
Auto
at the same show. Yeah,
at the Detroit Auto Show, on the same day, in the same hour, that they announced the new NSX, Honda announced the new NSX, and it was just fabulous to be in Detroit and see the media sort of when they unveiled the GT, the media just sort of forgot about the NSX. it was just a I think it was
there's a yeah I mean it was the same weekend moment. And we didn't plan it. We don't look at when anybody else is introducing, but it's an interesting story. There's a protocol at auto shows that when someone else is doing their show, you turn down your music, you don't announce on top of them, so everybody has their specific time that they'll do their vehicle introduction. So we did our GT introduction down in Joe Louis Arena, which is different from where the show's actually held. So we have to move our cars. Everybody else does it on their stand. We do it in the arena, and we have to move our cars. And so we did ours first and showed the GT, and it was a spectacular introduction, et cetera. And then we had to get our car over to our stand, which was past the Honda stand. I swear to God, we didn't plan this, but they're introducing the NSX, and behind them, the GT rolls by to go over to our stand. And you can, if you watch the videos of the NSX introduction, you'll see the back of everyone's head, and then everybody turns around to watch the GT and ignores the NSX for a while. So Honda was not real happy with us, but I swear it was an accident.
Good news, Alone on History, back for a fourth season with a crazy new twist. Rules have changed. 10 survivalists are still dropped into an unforgiving wilderness, but now it's 5 competing teams, brothers, fathers, and sons, a married couple. It's a different kind of survival show. Besides their teammate, they're truly alone. No camera crews, they film themselves, no gimmicks, no forced challenges. Teams are split, equipped with 5 items each. To win, they must find each other and survive on North Vancouver Island the longest. And guess what? There's $500,000 at stake. So, let's review. Alone on History. Tune in for all new episodes. Thursday, 10 o'clock, 9 Central. That's 10 o'clock, 9 Central on History. Alone. Watch what happens. Hey, let's get back to the show.
Do we have one more question? Right in the middle here, please.
To Brian and to Chip, I mean, watching the footage of Bruce McLaren and Pedro Rodriguez, all those great drivers, and Carroll Shelby and that, what does it feel to carry that legacy with the new GT and, you know, beyond?
So, Ryan and Chip, what's it like to be a custodian of the legacy of the Ford GT?
Well, I think, first of all, I think any automotive enthusiast knows bits and pieces of that story. But I think how lucky we are to have the 1966 and the build-up to 66 story told now. And I mean, I think that's a story that needed to be told. And obviously that validates, somewhat what we did in 16, but I just, you know, it, I think while 16 was a huge, the first thing they say about the 16 win was it was 50 years to the day of that. So I think, I can't explain what it means. I can only tell you that I didn't realize the passion. My earlier story about meeting Edsel and talking about this program, I didn't realize the passion that GT40 stirred among automobile racing, motorsports enthusiasts. I didn't realize. I mean, I guess I knew, but I didn't realize it, to be quite honest. And I don't know that there is a car that commands the verve that the GT and the history of the GT bring. So it's an honor. It's to simply say it's an honor to carry that legacy.
Ryan, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I just can't say how much of an honor it has been to be a part of this program, to be a part of the history, to drive this car, to be a part of the Ford family in this program. It's just, it's incredible. You know, Le Mans last year, I mean, everyone from Ford was there, you know, from, you know, the top, and they brought families and avid fans and people that were there back in the 60s, and we got to shake so many hands and carry that banner, and it was just such an honor. The car is incredible to drive, and it sort of commands that authority. I mean, I've been driving it now for almost 2 years, but every time I drive it down pit lane, you see that you're turning heads. You know, people just want to look at you driving the Ford GT. And it's just one of those cars that's just, it looks different, it looks incredible. And I think any driver is sort of jealous that they're not, you know, behind the wheel of this car. So I feel extremely lucky, and, you know, thank Chip and Raj and everyone for letting me be a part of it.
Hey, good news. If you listen to this show, you probably have a car. If you have a car, you need GEICO. You want to save some money? How about hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? You don't have to do anything. Just go to GEICO.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Put a little extra money in your pocket. And I think it's about the most rewarding thing you can do all day. So go to GEICO.com. In 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your car insurance. It's GEICO.
I think, Bruce. Other Bruce? Better Bruce? We'll just call you Better Bruce because it's always confusing with Bruce Meyer and Bruce Canepa.
I go back to the 80s, and we were with Chip when he first got an IndyCar team and he first won races, so we have a long experience. What hasn't been mentioned here, and Henry and Raj and Chip, all of you, can weigh in on this, but you not only...
Well, you know what? I'll hand you the mic for this one.
You not only went back to Le Mans 50 years later, but rather than taking two or three or whatever years it took the first time to win, you went back 50 years later and won it the first time. And you won it with a team that had never been to Le Mans. And that was a huge risk, obviously, on Ford's part. Obviously, you won DP championships and lots of IndyCar races, but you took a brand new car that was only tested a few races before it went to Le Mans, and those were tough in the very beginning, the first one especially. And you went back and you won Le Mans right out of the box. New team, new car. It's really incredible when you think of that part of this whole thing.
All right, so let me paraphrase. Why are you guys so awesome? It's a hard-hitting question, Bruce. You don't mince words. All right. I think going out on
I'm just going to agree. We are.
An incredibly positive note is the way to go. I know everyone has questions all night. Jonathan, I was going to jump to you, but, you know, Bruce has my 935. I don't want to screw with him. thank you guys for coming out here, enjoying the film, and being a part of history. You can get this film at Chassis, chassy.com. It's our website. We have many other films, motoring and beyond. And look soon for the Willie T. Ribs doc coming out that you gearheads are going to enjoy. Until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Matt the Motorator, DeAndre, saying Aaron the Spare and the Bag and the Wheel. Thanks, guys.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
With
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.